Oh, yeah. We got intro music. How do you like it, Nikki?
I love it.
All right. Great. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. It's Cultivating Change with Martin Mayorga and...
Nicholas Mayorga.
Welcome back, everybody. I know it's not Wednesday, but it's close. It's almost kind of Wednesday. It's Friday. But we're going to get... It's almost Wednesday. We're going to get closer and closer to Wednesday till we actually do this every Wednesday. Obviously, it's been super dynamic few weeks. And I know we're not alone in that. I hope everybody's staying safe and healthy and mentally sound and positive and getting through this tough situation the best that you can. And, you know, I'm appreciative of the people who listen to this podcast and provide feedback. You know, relating to feedback, I get a good amount, which I appreciate. And I wanted to kind of come back and let you guys know that I'm hearing you and I'm taking note. I just am having a hard time piecing episodes around things like, you know, explain how the coffee market works. And I could. It's just a very, and I guess it's not even the fact that I struggle with the content. I just wonder if people want to just keep hearing me just ramble about stuff. So I've, this, you know, I've debated bringing on guests and maybe a coffee trader. And the problem is, you know, the few traders I've asked don't want to come on the podcast because of the things I say about them. So... they're a little bit concerned that I'll turn on them. So I'm going to put together episodes, and maybe the next episode will be just a list of the things that people have asked me to cover, and I'll just kind of go down one by one with them. That might be the best approach. You know, today, I think really what I want to discuss is really kind of the root of this podcast. Obviously, the name Cultivating Change, the word cultivating being the wordsmith that I am, I use to... you know, kind of bring in the cultivation of product and agriculture, but the change aspect, change of how we do business, what we define as success, what we define as, you know, capitalism that should be rewarded and respected. And honestly, I've never felt more strongly than the last 3 weeks about how badly we need change, because the last 3 weeks have exposed a lot of things. I think, you know, if there's anything that we can take away on the positive from this situation and the terrible things that have happened to a lot of families and the unfortunate, you know, people losing loved ones, etc., we have to find ways to grow from this and evolve from it. And honestly, for me, it just exposed so much of what's wrong with capitalism today. You know, maybe I'll get more anecdotal about it than kind of give my opinions, but, you know, stuff like... and this is, you know, I know it sounds privileged and a little self-serving, but I'll just give you my insights. And, you know, people who know me know that I'm not, I feel like I'm out of my element in the business world. I don't feel like I kind of belong at the table with a lot of the people. Not because I don't belong, because I don't want to belong. You know, I'm in some professional organizations with some very successful people, and I deal with a lot of people of, you know, whether it's buyers or different people in the corporate world. And I just never feel right because I just don't relate and don't agree with a lot of the ways that businesses run. So, you know, just little anecdotes. The last few weeks, you know, obviously a lot of things have happened. One of the things that really kind of remind me of where we've slipped up, we've, you know, I've recognized that we've slipped up on a few things. The first, and that there's no order of importance, just kind of the first thing that comes to mind. You know, when the payroll protection plan or program, whatever it's called, loan came out, we started inquiring about it with Citibank, who's been our bank for several years. I sent an email to our relationship manager, and I said, hey, can you talk to us about the process, what it looks like, et cetera? You know, we've been fortunate that our business has stayed strong, but, you know, we've carried a lot of payroll in parts of the business that have actually stopped generating revenue. So, you know, you can only do that for so long. So we're looking at those loans. And Citibank's response, my relationship manager, responded with an email saying, please check our website. There'll be updates on the website as they, you know, are available to us. And I was like, this is crazy. I mean, we're a corporate account. We have a lot of staff. We direct deposit into their account, which means that some of our staff has moved over to them. We're a mid-sized company. I mean, we're not a small mom and pop, but we have serious deposits and transactions. In this bank, when we're reaching out for something where we need support, where the government has been, you know, forward thinking enough to put something out there, they say check our website. I felt very exposed. I felt very kind of, I felt stupid, honestly, that we had even banked with Citibank, because given the way we operate in my mindset, it was never a right fit to begin with. But it was interesting. So I reached out to a lot of banks for multiple days. I put a LinkedIn post, got a lot of responses, a lot of intros. And every bank said, you know, we're only supporting our current customers. We're only supporting our current customers. And fortunately, there was one bank, City National Bank here in Miami. I said, well, we want you as a customer. Let's get you signed on and we'll help you. And obviously, we're going to prioritize our customers, but we'll put you in the queue. And we applied. We haven't heard back and we'll see what happens. But it just reminded me of how irrelevant we are in the business world and how irrelevant most businesses are in the business world. Because the business world is really, you know, major, major entities like Citibank and their key clients. And, you know, Chase, I'm sure some of you have seen that now there's lawsuits. There's somebody out of Chicago suing Chase and a couple other banks because the money ran out by the time they could apply, and Chase never even gave them the opportunity to apply yet. You know, Ruth's Chris and some of the other bigger companies were able to jump the line, if you will. So that was kind of a big reminder to me that I have to make sure that I keep the roots of who we are and what we do. One of the things that's made me a little unpopular, I guess, with banks, and we don't work with bank debt, and we stopped, you know, we paid off our SBA loans in 2009, I believe. And it was a very uncomfortable situation because I'm not a traditional business person. And it made me feel like I got lazy with, you know, just kind of putting our money in Citibank and banking with them and not keeping us in a place where we're working with the kind of people that we should be working with, which is community banks, a regional bank, somebody that really understands our needs. So that was a learning moment. The other big one for me was our staff. I mean, as you guys know, we shut down production for 2 weeks, and you know, I realized, man, you know, and I've always said this, and we always recognize this as a management team, how important our production staff is. I mean, what we do is important. What our production staff does is critical. And, you know, we did a pay raise. I think the minimum we pay now is $18 an hour for anybody that's just starting out with us. And we decided to keep that as a permanent situation because I realized, man, you know, these are people who we value so much and we do a lot. You know, we do more than most companies. But, you know, I always ask Janae, are we doing everything we can to make sure that this is a place that nobody ever would want to leave? And it made me realize, like, we could pay more, and we did, and we are. And I regret that we didn't look at that closer before, because you get sucked into the typical, you know, margins and, you know, profit expectations and everything, even though ours are low. So that was another one. What else? Well, I have an interesting story, and I have to tell it very carefully. I have a lot of stories I could tell, but I'm careful not to tell them on the podcast because they become permanent record, and if I say anything that I shouldn't. So here's a story. I get a phone call from a number I didn't know on my cell phone, and it was a guy who I've met once or twice, and I think he's the second or third generation business owner of a very large, let's say, food service company that specializes in coffee. Hey, buddy, how you doing? Haven't talked to you in a long time, blah, blah, blah. I got Joe on the phone. He's my CFO, and I got Steve on the phone. He's our lawyer. And the first thing, honestly, like, my heart started racing. I was like, what did I say? Like, did I put something on LinkedIn? Did I say something on a podcast? You know, are these guys calling me to, like, threaten to sue me because I said something, you know, about them? But immediately, he starts sweet-talking me about how much he likes what we've been doing and the brand and everything. And basically just goes out and says, I'm calling you because I want to make you a cash offer for your company. Asset purchase only. We can close within 10 days. Cash deal. And, you know, kind of kept talking about how great a deal would be for me and how much, you know, he hadn't given me the price. And I sat there quietly, and I'm sure the guy thought that I was just like, wow, this is the greatest moment. I was so fucking offended. I was so bothered that this guy that had just laid off from what I hear, allegedly, 60 to 75% of their staff, basically, you know, put people out of work. They're having to, you know, figure out unemployment and, you know, what their future looks like, has a pile of cash and thinks he can just pick up the phone and call me and I'm going to jump on whatever amount of money. And I told him I didn't want to hear the amount. I didn't care. And that I would jump on the fact that in 10 days, my staff, my farmers, my suppliers, my customers that I've worked with for 23 years to build up would just kind of evaporate for me. For what? For a pile of cash. And it was funny because those who know me know that I kind of have two gears. I'm pretty chill and mellow, and I'm very nice, or I'm not. And I'm kind of direct. And I kind of took a breath and I bit my tongue. I said, look, I'm really not interested. He's like, don't you want to hear, you know, the specifics? I said, I really don't. I really like what I do. I like what I'm doing a lot. And I just hung up. And it's funny because the more I thought about it, the more kind of offended I got. I was like, man, you know, the priorities of business are so fucked up that these people have all this money to try to grow market share. They liked our business because we're in grocery. We're with the right clients right now that are moving product. Their core business is food service, so they're struggling. But they either have all this cash or have access to all this cash, are willing to kind of sweep away their staff and just go and, you know, acquire somebody. And it just kind of reiterated to me what I think is just so problematic with the fact that we've dehumanized so many things. And I think the concept of businesses has been such a big player in that, a big kind of catalyst to turning people into numbers and turning people into statistics. And at the same time afterwards, I felt proud because I felt proud of the fact that that's not something we would ever be a part of for the company. You know, we're a company that, like I told our staff, we're going to grow together, we're going to sink together. But, you know, this situation with coronavirus, we're not going to be the company like the ones you hear about that write a letter to their staff saying, you're all, you know, out of a job and we'll allow you to apply for unemployment. So, I don't know. A lot of things have happened in the past few weeks where I've been like, you know, things are really crazy. Things like coffee that people are trying to get out of origin, traders basically selling, you know, at double the market at, you know, huge, huge differentials or huge premiums. And the farmers aren't seeing it. Traders just know they can capitalize on a tough situation. So it's just, it's time that we look at these things. It's time we look at food fraud, which is pretty much the norm. I mean, if you're in the food business and you disagree, please challenge me. Please come onto the podcast and prove to me that food fraud is not the norm when it comes to, you know, specialty agriculture, like, you know, ancient grains out of Latin America. It is the most rampant thing happening in the industry. And it's become the norm and it's become accepted and everybody turns a blind eye to it. But it's all kind of been kind of accentuated and hopefully it's been exposed. And, you know, I want to say also it's been exposed and it should be exposed on both ends. You know, one of the things that happened was after the last big crash we had in the economy in 2008 or so, we saw this new emergence of entrepreneurs arrive basically because the corporate jobs were gone, right? And the trust that America had on big corporate to be the place where you can kind of live the American dream and, you know, buy your home and have your car. A, it didn't seem like it was enough anymore. And B, it wasn't really attainable because Enron and different companies that proved that no matter how big you were, you could just fail. But what it did is it brought up a new crop of entrepreneurs. And in my opinion, it's entrepreneurs that wanted to take the pendulum way in the other direction where, you know, you look at what is it that people don't like about businesses and how do we become the opposite? And not even how do we become the opposite, how do we pretend to be the opposite? And I'm going to speak more specifically about coffee because that's what I've been doing mostly for the last 23 years, even though we do the, you know, chia, quinoa, and other stuff now. But you saw these small coffee companies pop up and it was all about this kind of extreme, we're going to save the farmer with very specific magic pill approaches to a very complex and very established, you know, couple hundred year old issue. So you have these tiny little roasters that move, you know, 5,000 pounds of coffee a year, saying, well, we're going to save the farm workers, we're paying them $5 a pound, which, just so everybody knows, it's a lot of money. It's a lot. In my opinion, it's too much in a lot of situations, especially when most of the time they're not even paying the farmer that. They're paying a trader that. But what happened was they started convincing consumers that the new era of entrepreneurs was coming to save the world, you know, and you had Tom's Shoes that came out and was successful with a good model that, you know, started the whole one-for-one thing. And some came out and really did it and did it to scale. And I'm not putting Tom's in the category of the new kind of opportunistic entrepreneurs. I think they did a nice job. I'm talking about the ones that followed, especially in coffee. And they basically started recognizing that sustainability and sustainable development were great marketing tools. And I think they, you know, tricked the consumer into thinking, well, if I support these companies, I'm helping farmers, I'm helping Latin America, I'm helping Africa, Indonesia. And of course, it sounds like it's helpful, right? If I'm paying $7 for a cup of coffee and my coffee roaster's paying $5 for it, for the pound of coffee, then, you know, everybody's happy, even though I think people were, you know, dramatically overpaying. But we didn't address the issues that were happening in Latin America, and we still haven't. You know, we're not addressing access to capital, access to market, access to food, you know, all the things that, just go back down the episodes and you'll hear me talk about it. We're not addressing it. We're still not addressing it. We're looking for a magic pill, and the magic pill is pay more. Cool, we can do that for maybe 0.25% of the coffee that's purchased. But if you look at the real volume of coffee purchased, we can't do that because the market will not allow it. And at the end of the day, we're in the market, we're in a situation where we have consumers that we have to also respect and also be fair to. And in my opinion, it's not fair to a producer and say, well, you need to fix this, so overpay for product. It's not the consumer's fault, and it's not their place to fix it. It's the industry's place to put the model together that works. That's why my company makes 6% net, if we're lucky. That's why we invest heavily into Latin America. I mean, again, go down the list of other podcasts and I talk about the things we do. We have very humble expectations of what it means to be a successful company. And our definition of success is not just financial. So I think what's happened now is the pendulum has swung the other way. Now, during this coronavirus situation, we're also seeing that be exposed, which I think is, you know, I hate to say it's good because I think, you know, a lot of people's jobs and livelihoods are affected, but it's important that realities come to light. You know, I tell people all the time, like, you know, these little roasters now that we're just selling locally and now want to go online, how can they afford this 50% discount that they're offering now across the board? How can their margins were astronomical. And I think until we build healthy business models, we don't have healthy solutions. And I think right now it's just everybody's kind of getting their layers peeled back and looking at what are we doing, what works, what doesn't work. And my argument, and this sounds like a very boring solution, which is we have to go through these things and kind of ride out the middle ground. We can't just go from this over-commercialized industry that just rewards big money, you know, influence, power, good old boy clubs, and then swing it into this, we're all NGOs, but we're really not. And, you know, it's just, we have to walk before we run. I feel that my org has been doing that by saying, look, we're going to buy a really nice specialty coffee, but we don't care if your coffee's an 80, 70, because we know that that's not the bulk of the volume that's out there. We want to help you with 80, 90% of your coffee. That's why we're doing the 83 cup coffees and, you know, good specialty coffee, but it's not going to be, you know, something that's, these small guys are going to, you know, they look down their nose at it. They even look down their nose at blending and different things that we do. But I just feel like we all need to kind of take a breath. We all need to say, look, let's pull the ego out of this. If you're in this for ego, it's going to be very short-lived. If you want to really make a change, let's make a change, and let's do it in an intelligent way that's sustainable. You know, I'm very proud right now that we move insane volumes of coffee to the level that I never thought we would. So what we're trying to do is leverage the scale that has actually caused the problem to help fund the solution. So You know, I think part of what we need to look at is, you know, what is sustainable, what is feasible, what is realistic, and what expectations should we have? I keep saying the expectations on returns on investment are just, they're old fashioned. When you had five companies per category, you could look at making 20%, 15%. But now there's a lot of competition, which is good. You can't make 15% net. I don't care if you want to, because then there's going to be companies like me, like Mayorga, who have a bigger picture and have a bigger sense of purpose and say, look, let's take 6% to the bottom line, be happy with what we're doing, develop our people, develop relationships, watch our staff grow, watch them evolve, create more opportunity for them as we grow, and let's have a comprehensive model. And I don't know, I just hope things move that way, and I hope that people start thinking more pragmatically and start to realize through these days when I think we've all been kind of brought into a level of looking more simplistically at life and saying what is really important to us, our health, our family, our loved ones, stability, whether it's financial or just, you know, social, having that stability that we've all kind of lost over the last few weeks. Maybe let's take that time when things are a little bit raw and things are kind of peeled back, and let's look at things. Let's look at the realities of inequalities in some of our more ethnic neighborhoods and cities where, you know, I think people of color just do not have the same opportunities. They just don't, and it infuriates me. I mean, it made me almost start. By the way, I'm not moving forward with the whole rice, bean, and lentil thing on the conventional scale that I talked about, either the last episode or the one before. It's just too big a thing for me to take on, and it's disappointing. And even to that note, I want to bring something up. I got a lot of good support because people wanted us to get on board with it. But here's something I saw. The people who knew the issues, had the energy and brain power and capacity to do something about it, were all NGOs. All NGOs that were just like, you have to do this, you have to do this, it's important, this is what's happening. I got no real kind of insight on the private sector. And no offense to the NGOs, but the market moves to the private sector. And if anything, I got resistance and I got kind of resentment from some of the industry. So there's a lot of fundamental issues, and I think we need to look at those fundamental issues and change them. There was a really nice, and Aaron, the company president, Mayorga president, sent the whole staff actually a really good video with Simon Sinek that just came out last week. But he said something that really struck me, and he said something, you know, as we're all stressed, as we all kind of look towards the future and we don't know what we're dealing with, he said, you know, the beauty of it is, if there's one thing that we have, it's the unbuilt future, and that's the certainty that we can move forward with. And to me, that was so meaningful because it's the fact, the word unbuilt, the fact that the future we have ahead of us is so unknown, that's scary. But if you change the word from unknown to unbuilt, that means that we can create the future, we can support the right companies, align with the right partners, you know, just put the energy to where it needs to go to help people to really create balance. And I'm not looking to create charities. I'm not looking to create, you know, the socialistic approach to business. I just think we all need to kind of look at the fact that we do share, you know, a society and an earth with a lot of people that don't have the same opportunities. And we should leverage whatever we have to try to balance that. So that's kind of it, I think. Very ranty, I know, a little bit all over the place, but that's kind of where I'm at right now. To be frank, my energy has been zapped out by just planning the next 8 to 12 months. It's very tough figuring out how much product we need to have in line, packaging, how much should we over, you know, prepare in case of shortages. Are we going to be caught with too much product? Just the staffing and the, you know, ramping up that we've taken on over the last 4 weeks, which has been the most kind of challenging thing I've been in a business, where we had the opportunity to seize the most business we've ever faced, but it was at the expense of putting our staff at risk. And, you know, we had to make that choice to shut down the factory for a couple of days or a couple of weeks. So yeah, I think part of the reason this podcast has probably been a little bit undefined the last few weeks is it's taking all my headspace to create definition within the business and, you know, try to be a good leader, which can be a little bit tiring. And, but, you know, I feel fortunate to have the opportunity. And you know what? I have I'm fortunate enough to have great people to do it with Aaron, Janae, and Andy, and Eduardo, and Wendy, and everybody that's involved. So, you know I talk a lot about myself here, but I just don't want to put our staff, who is actually pretty private in general, in a place where I'm saying things about them or getting them involved in things that maybe they don't want me to get them involved in publicly. But just know that they're incredibly hardworking and talented, and the best thing is they share the values that I talk about here, and I think it's what keeps them motivated to do what they do. So I think that's pretty much all I have to say. I do recommend, and I wish I had the name of that podcast. It was a video with Simon Sinek. It just aired like last week. But that quote really hit me about, you know, the unbuilt future. It makes things really kind of exciting to think that we can build a future based on the lessons we've learned. And I think we're obligated to do so. So that's kind of it for me today. How about for you, Nikki? Do you have anything you have to say?
Not really. It was a good podcast, though.
Was it?
Yeah.
How have you been doing, man?
I've been doing good.
What's the perspective from a kid your age, given the current, you know, just life right now? Not about the business stuff I'm talking about, but just like what life has been like.
Well, for me, of course, since I was homeschooled before this, it's definitely still felt a lot of the same. It's not like I was going a lot of places before.
Well, you were going a lot of places.
I was going a lot of places, but
Latin
I wasn't
America
like going.
And, yeah.
Most kids my age are mostly just like playing video games and just like chilling because there's nothing really else to do. I mean, you can't really go many places, or you shouldn't go many places. I've just been focusing on doing my schoolwork and working on hobbies like bee making and working on videos and stuff like that for myself.
What's been your favorite thing about, you know, I always say like find the positive in anything. And so given the state of affairs the last, you know, 4 weeks or so of really not going places, what have been your favorite things about hanging out here?
My favorite thing, I guess just all the time that I have to just do like any hobbies, like especially just making beats, honestly. I've just been really enjoying having a bunch of time to work on that and work on making videos of that too.
That's cool. What's been your favorite meal?
Taquitos. So it's like string beef wrapped in like a tortilla. Was it a corn tortilla is it a flour?
Oh, no,
was
it corn? We only do corn in this house.
Okay, it was a corn tortilla. I say that's so weird. And it was fried a little bit, so it was like a little bit crispy, and you dip it in guacamole, and it's delicious. Or you can have it with Cholula sauce.
Cholula's nice. Yeah, we've been eating well. I have a brisket in the oven right now that I grilled. So I seared on the grill, and now has been slow cooking, so we'll be eating that tonight. But yeah, to your point, I mean, it's kind of nice that we find ourselves. I mean, think about it. I was on a plane no less than twice a week in hotels, driving, traveling. For me, I've been getting full night's sleep. And for me, a full night is 6 to 7 hours, you know, consistently. I've had a few nights where I've been too stressed to sleep. But, you know, 6 to 7 hour nights of sleep are just unheard of for me. I've lost 12 pounds just, I think, because I'm not eating junk and on the run. So, you know, in a way, I've looked at that as, you know, the positives. To be honest, I have been frustrated that I can't just go up to Maryland and be in the facility. I can't go meet with clients. We should have been still in Latin America through the harvest. But, you know, you have to kind of take a look at reality and make the best of it. And I think being here at the house has been nice. And I fulfilled the lifelong thing. Ever since I watched the movie, I forgot the movie, but I just remember seeing with this guy, he was like me, like a middle-aged dude, and he decided like he had a gym in his garage and like he was working out on there. I'm like, I think it'd be cool to have a gym in a garage. And
that was your lifelong dream.
That was my big dream, and we fulfilled it yesterday. We got the mats and we got the dumbbells and the kettlebells, and we had our first workout in the garage.
Yeah, it was nice.
And you know, here in Miami, it's hot and muggy, so it's sweaty, and you know, it felt, I don't know why, I've always wanted to have a garage gym, so that was nice.
Yeah, I think the best part mostly of just quarantine has been that even though I wasn't like going a bunch, well, I was like traveling a lot, but like when we weren't traveling, it's not like I was going a bunch of places or doing a lot of stuff, but I just feel like I have that extra time just to, you know, work on myself and like, you know, working out, getting in shape, working on skate stuff, like skate tricks, and working on bettering myself and learning more things and learning hobbies and learning new things, like learning new hobbies, and it's just been time well spent.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, right? It's just making the best of it. And I always say that it's the mindset that really determines every our own happiness. You know, I think happiness is a concept we create in our heads, and you know, it's the difference between what we expected out of life and what we think life is. And I think when we have a positive attitude, we always have a positive perception of what life is. So I think that's important. And I think, you know, for adults, not necessarily for you, but you are at the age where you should start looking at some of those things. These are the times too, to look at, you know, what matters to me, what matters to the people I care about, and really how do I become a positive part of society and a positive part of the world. And, you know, how do I become somebody that maybe is the voice for the people that don't have a voice, or maybe is the person who fights for the, whether it's animals, the environment, whatever it is. That's what drives me. I don't know what it is, but I've always had that inside of me, which is, you know, there are people out there who were not given opportunity. There are people out there who were not given a voice in the market, in society. And if I have a voice, then I should do something towards that. So it's a good time for people to look at that and say, what can I do with myself to be a productive part of what hopefully is a new society and a new future and a new form of capitalism and business and success? Because, man, everything can just kind of fall apart like it did in the last 4 weeks, and you have to really revisit your priorities. And I hope a lot of people are. I really do. And I hope people in general remember the fear and the, you know, not in a bad way, but in a way of like, all right, I got to remember to even taking care of yourself, you know, even eating well, even exercising. It's very important. Anyway, that's all for me. Anything else from you?
Everyone still stay home, I think. Unless, yeah. No, just still stay home.
Yeah. Stay home until Nikki says you can leave your house. How about that?
All right.
Listen for the next, wait for the next podcast. If Nikki says you can go out, you can go out.
What if we just like forget to do a podcast?
And stay home. People are staying home. So thanks everybody. Sorry if I was like maybe a little bit not focused and not kind of, I typically think and speak in bullet points, but sometimes this podcast is more of a venue for me to vent, and hopefully at least it brings some value to people. And keep bringing me your ideas, and maybe next week I'll kind of segment it out and answer some of the questions.
Yeah, do like a Q&A.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because it's a one-sided Q&A. I'll just take notes of the emails and the DMs. One thing I do want to point out, I'm not the guy to go to for technical stuff on coffee. I know enough about coffee to do what I need to do to help grow a business, to you know, make an impact. And this is going to sound, and all the coffee geeks cover your ears, I purposely don't want to know too much about coffee. And I know people think I'm insane to grow a business. That I just feel like, Once you get technical into the quality aspect of something, past the point of really kind of practicality, then you really go down a rabbit hole that takes you away from common sense of what the consumer needs. Obviously, I know a lot more than the average coffee drinker, but I work with very intelligent people who are very qualified to know more than me about coffee, and whose job it is to know more about coffee than I do. So my point is, super geeky coffee questions, I'm not going to answer on the podcast. I'll typically email you back on those and or pass them to Eduardo or whoever it might be that's appropriate for those questions, whether it's, you know, if it's origin based or whatever. But yeah, general stuff. I mean, the podcast to me is a place to talk about that gray area of business that maybe a lot of people don't talk about, and do it in a very honest and open way. So, you know, I'll talk about things about sustainable development, food fraud, you know, my opinion on what I think would be the best way to support communities right now in Latin America, things like that. And again, this is all my opinion. This is not necessarily correct, but it's based on 23 years of doing something I really believe in and having very strong opinions on things that I've experienced myself and have seen happen in the industry that reinforce the thoughts that I have about the industry. So that's that. That's my disclaimer. Anything else, Nikki?
No, that's it for me. And yeah.
Let's go have some brisket.
All right.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. And maybe next Wednesday. Probably next Wednesday.
I'll just set an alarm every Wednesday for a podcast.
And all right. Then Nikki's going to set his alarm, guys. And don't leave the house until Nikki tells you to.
Yeah. All right. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.